Oh, wow. Thank you very much, Krista. It's interesting how the process goes when you're looking at doing something like this here today, when this is not what you do on a regular basis. I'm more of a truck driver. I should have a mic this way. Salesman and a storyteller. This whole process started probably before I went to Kenya. Through one of the meetings there, it was brought up that, there were going to be two Sundays and we're going to need two of us to speak. And in my mind, I'm thinking, get small, last one under the table is going to be in trouble. But I felt the Lord speaking to me saying that this is something that you're supposed to be doing. Okay, I can, that's in Kenya. It's a long ways away. They won't see me again after I'm done. That's, you know, there's some blessings in that. But then there's the other side of that. What do you have for me to say? What am I supposed to speak about? How do I relate in Kenya? How do I relate my life here and make it relevant over there? And I didn't know where that was, but the word, there's a story. The story of Jehoshaphat was one of the stories that really became real to me as I read through the Bible last year. And never really noticed it before. When you're looking at it from the Sunday school, the highlights, the Cole's note versions of everything you do growing up until you get into it, I missed it. But that story made real, and I thought that's where we were going, but I didn't know how. It's interesting how God works in you. I was at work. I was sitting in the service department. If you don't know, I sell trucks for Peterbilt. And I was in the service department talking with one of my customers just before we left for Kenya. And they had brought the truck back, and I said, you know, if I'm around, if it's before Thursday, before we leave, I don't mind bringing it back down to Quinnell. We'll make it happen kind of thing. And when I said the word Kenya, there's this other customer who's her broken-down truck driver from the U.S. was sitting there kind of just quiet, leaning up against the wall, and I said Kenya. His eyes just opened just a little bit. I just seen kind of a little head bob and a notice like that. So I was sitting in my office later, and he came walking by, and he stuck his head, and he said, can I speak to you for a minute? And I said, yeah, sure, come on in. I'm thinking, I'm doing what I'm doing, right? And he sits down and he said, I couldn't help but hear that you were on your way to Kenya. And I said, yeah. I said, I'm going with the men's team. We're going down for to build a fence for an orphanage down there. And he says, I've been feeling that God's been calling me to Kenya or to Africa, not Kenya specific, but to Africa for a long time. And I'm just wondering, how do I get there? And I'm like, really? Where is this coming from? So he sat down. It was amazing. It was slow, which is a good thing, because we sat and talked for about 2 hours. But his whole story was talking about how he was in Illinois, and he was feeling that God was leading him to move out to the West Coast. And it's just this whole story of obedience and other stories that he's heard of obedience and the amazing powers, that amazing stories that God's given to people of obedience. And as I'm looking at this, I'm going, that's exactly the story of Jehoshaphat. But Jehoshaphat's story of obedience isn't 100% my story of obedience, because I'm living more on the human side of obedience than on the, okay, you've told me, let's go. That is, as I was looking through the Bible, I'm going, what other way? And that's where I came up with the story of two kings. As I look at obedience through two different kings and two different experiences. And starting off, I want to start off with the story of Saul and some of his experiences with obedience and God's call in his life. To lead up to this, Saul is sitting at Gilgal. He's got his army gathered, a small army, up against the Philistines, which is, he's feeling like this is just not going to be a great day. He's impatient. He's waiting for Samuel to show up to do the offerings and to do the sacrifices and to hear from God. And he's just impatient. And none of us know about this because we're all patient people. But he takes it into his own hands. He goes, does the sacrifices, and he can't wait for Samuel anymore. So as soon as he's done, Samuel shows up. And I'm going to start reading here at verse 13, 1 Samuel 13, verse 13. How foolish, Saul, Samuel exclaimed. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. Had you kept it, the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. But now your kingdom must end, for the Lord has sought out a new man after his own heart. The Lord has already appointed him to be the leader of his people because you have not kept God's command. As you look at that, I'm going, yep, he failed. But if you read through the rest of that story, God still won the battle. Jonathan went out with his armor bearer, and this is where Jonathan went out, started the battle. They killed themselves, basically, and Israel still won. So you're looking at that, and you're going, well, he didn't keep the command. How does that work? The reality of it is God's story will still be told. We will maybe miss the glory that was put out there for us to experience as God's commander and what he's done. When I listen to Saul's story, I kind of think that I've been caught. I've got dad, doing that experience of God, of dad saying, well, I told you to do this. Well, yeah, but really, but Laverne was, he took this and the stories come out, right? You're deflecting. And that's as we look on into chapter 15, the next command that's been given to Saul, saying to go out against the Amalekites. And we'll start on 1 Samuel 15, just read the start of the story with the command of what's going on here. It says, one day Samuel said to Saul, it was the Lord who told me to anoint you as the king of his people Israel. Now listen to this message from the Lord. This is what the Lord of heaven's armies has declared. I have decided to settle accounts with the nation of Amalek for opposing Israel when they came from Egypt. Here's the command. Now go and completely destroy the entire Amalekite nation. Men, women, children, baby, cattle, sheep, goats, camels, donkeys. Saul goes out, carries out the command in his understanding or in his way, the human side of it. And this comes back, the battle's over. Saul's gone off to Gilgal to set up an altar to himself. And Samuel is coming to find Saul, and here's where we start in chapter 13 or verse 13. When Samuel finally found him, Saul greeted him cheerfully. May the Lord bless you, he said. I have carried out the Lord's command. And this is probably more where you're trying to deflect it here. And Samuel says, then what is all this bleating of sheep and goats and lowing of cattle that I hear? Samuel demanded. Oh, it's true. It's true that the army spared the best of the sheep and the goats and the cattle, Saul admitted. But they're going to sacrifice them to the Lord, your God. We have destroyed everything else. So there's that first separation of the sin that's come up here, is that the guilt, the feeling, the separation, the Lord, your God. So that's the, yeah, I did it. Oh, I've been caught. So now it's deflection. Go down to verse 21. When my troops brought the best of the sheep and the goats and the cattle and plundered back to sacrifice to the Lord, your God at Gilgal. And then Samuel's response is the verse that was up here this morning. What is more pleasing to the Lord, your burnt offerings and sacrifices, or your obedience to his voice? Listen, obedience is better than sacrifice, and submission is better than the offerings of the fat of rams. Rebellion is as sinful as witchcraft, and stubbornness as bad as worshiping idols. So because you have rejected the Lord your God, he has rejected you as king. You put it back out there, and it all looks, I won the battle. I did it best of my commands, but I've fallen short of the glory that God had for me when he's called me to do that. As I look back in my life, I can see that. I feel the calling, and I've gone to where I felt comfortable or where I've had control of it, where I can do what I can do. And it works. It doesn't maybe work successfully, as good as it could have been. But that's what it looks like sometimes when we rely on our human side of things. As we go on from here, we go to read Jehoshaphat's story. We're switching over to 2 Chronicles 20. And I got a little bit ahead of myself. I'm just going to stop and I'm going to pray because I'm feeling that I need to. Dear Lord, I thank you for this opportunity. I thank you for these people. Lord, you've given me these words, but Lord, there's people here to hear them, and they're all going to hear them in their own ways. Lord, I pray that you will speak through me, Lord, that they will hear from you as we reflected on this, Lord. I thank you for this time. I thank you for these people. I thank you for this church. In your name, amen. Listen to a very similar experience, very similar or very different outcome. I'm going to start at chapter 20, verse 1. After this, the armies of the Moabites, the Ammonites, and some of the Munites, declared war on the Jehoshaphat. Messengers, can't be the Mennonites, they're nonconformists, or they're COs, right? Sorry, it's my background. Jehoshaphat was terrified by this news and begged the Lord for guidance. He also ordered everyone in Judah to begin fasting. So people from all over the towns of Judah came to Jerusalem to seek the Lord's help. Jehoshaphat stood before the community of Judah and Jerusalem in front of the new courtyard of the temple of the Lord. He prayed, O Lord, God of our ancestors, you alone are the God who is in heaven. You are ruler over all nations of the earth. You are powerful and mighty. No one can stand against you. O our God, did you not drive out those who lived in this land when your people Israel arrived? And did you not give this land over to the descendants of your friend Abraham? Your people settled here and built this temple to honor your name and said, whenever you are faced with a calamity such as war, plague, or famine, we can come to stand in your presence before your temple where your name is honored. We can cry out to you to save us, and you will hear us and rescue us. And now see what the armies of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir are doing. You would not let your ancestors invade those nations when Israel left Egypt. So they went around them and did not destroy them. Now see how they reward us, for they have come to throw us out of your land, which you have given us as an inheritance. Our God, won't you stop them? We are powerless against this mighty army that is about to attack us. We do not know what to do, but we are looking to you for help. All the men of Judah stood before the Lord with their little ones, their wives, and their children. The Spirit of the Lord came upon one of the men standing there. His name was Jehaziel. He said, I'd like to hear this, have somebody come up and say this to me because it's a little bit easier to take. He said, listen, all you people of Judah and Jerusalem, listen, King Jehoshaphat, this is what the Lord says. Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged by this mighty army, for the battle is not yours, but God's. Tomorrow, march out against them. You will find them coming up through the ascent of Ziz at the end of the valley that opens into the wilderness of Jeruel. But you will not need to fight. You will not need to fight. Take your positions, then stand still and watch the Lord's victory. He is with you, O people of Judah and Jerusalem. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Go out against them tomorrow, for the Lord is with you. Then King Jehoshaphat bowed low with his face to the ground, and all the people of Judah and Jerusalem did the same, worshiping the Lord. That is, how do you take that? If you were to go that, and you're fearful, I don't know what the story would be, but you're fearful. God said, it is yours. You do not have to do anything. I've got this army. You do not have to do anything. I will win the battle for you. My human side makes different plans. I would say, yes, the battle is mine. He says I don't have to worry. But, Rick, I want you to take your men. Be ready, just in case. You're going to come around the left side. You know, just be careful. Steve, little football move here. We're going to go for the blind side. We're going to go a little quarterback sneak. You know, just be ready here, okay? That's my side. That's my thinking. Okay, yeah, the Lord has said, but I still need to be in control. This is, as you move on into verse 20, this is where, when I first read it and then read it over again, it just, my skin almost tingled just as reading this because of the obedience and the picture that unfolds out in front of them. Early the next morning, the army of Judah went out into the wilderness of Tekoa. On the way, Jehoshaphat stopped and said, listen to me, all you people of Judah and Jerusalem. Believe in the Lord your God and you will be able to stand firm. Believe in his prophets and you will succeed. After consulting the people, the king appointed the singers to walk out ahead of the army. Worship crew, how do you like that? You guys want to go out in front? What, you want us to take the arrows? Hope they run out? I'm not getting this. But that is the obedience that Jehoshaphat is showing here. After consulting the people, the king appointed the singers to walk out ahead of the army, singing to the Lord and praising him for his holy splendor. This is what they sang. Give thanks to the Lord. His faithful love endures forever. And this is the God that we serve. This is the God that shows up. This is not the God that I make him out to be in my humanness. This is the mighty God, the Lord of heaven's armies. At the very moment they began to sing and give praise to the Lord caused the armies of Ammon, Moab, and Mount Seir to start fighting among themselves. The armies of Moab and Ammon turned against their allies in the Mount Seir and killed every one of them. After they had destroyed the army of Seir, they began attacking each other. So when the army of Judah arrived at the lookout point of the wilderness, all they saw were dead bodies lying on the ground as far as they could see. Not a single one of them had escaped. The battle was God's. They came over. All they had to do was go take the glory of the battle. It was theirs. And that's where the difference of full obedience to human obedience, I guess if you want to put it that way, seeing the way that God will show up. This is where the part I'm going, okay, this is Old Testament. The last time I was reading through the Old Testament and listening to this, I don't remember God coming to me and saying, Mel, I think you need to gather an army and go wipe out McBride. The road washed out on the way there, so I couldn't make it, you know. It comes down to God of the Old Testament is still our God today. He is still mighty and strong. He's still speaking to us. And as Kurt led us through this, there is stuff that stood out to each one of us. As you're listening to the word obedience, God is calling to us every day that there is stuff that we need to be doing. There is fear that creeps into us as we think about this. But the battle is not ours. The battle is the Lord's. I think of this, being on the board for the last number of years, and as you look at everything that we're doing, as you look at where we're going, the statement, deeper roots, broader reach, is all about this. Deeper roots, broader reach is not just a fancy title that we planned up on the front here with a nice picture in behind it. That is what God is calling us to do. Deeper roots isn't just a Sunday school listening, and just isn't showing up at church on Sunday. That's comfort zone. That's complacency. God is calling us out of that comfort zone into what he's calling us to do. And that's where the deeper roots is. And if you look at that in the statement, deeper roots, broader reach. When I think of that, that's not really the way I want to see it. I don't see it in a line. I see it in a circle. Because until we get to know what God is calling us to do, get to know God in his scripture and what he's speaking to us through, when that happens, he's going to be calling us to the broader reach, to being out and effective in where we are and where we go. When that happens, you're going to get back into the deeper roots because your experience is going to take you back into the deeper roots. You're going to grow and back on to the broader reach. It's going to be, God's not going to let you do it once. He didn't let Jehoshaphat just sit there. Life kept going, right? That's where it's on us. It's not just going to happen to us. God is speaking. We have to be the boldness to go out there and to do it. I was thinking about this as what does this feel like? And back when I first moved out to Prince George here, and this was, I guess, 21 years ago, I first came out as a cowboy. I know picturing me as a salesman might be one thing. Picturing me as a cowboy is a different picture. We were working out at the ranch at the Barquet out at Nuka Lake there, and the skydive crew came in from Calgary, and they wanted to land to use our land because there are nice big open fields for landing on. And they said, if we can do that, any of your employees can come jump for free. And I'm thinking, this is perfect. This, you know, I don't have to pay. It's cowboy salary. It's not a whole lot of money. You're not, you don't have a lot of extras, mad money there. Eh? So that this is perfect. Carla, my wife, we had no kids at that point. She had already jumped once before. Hadn't told her parents about that. That was kind of an after the story. She won hers for free. So we went to the ground school, and it's interesting, you're at ground school and you're going through all this thing and they're telling you, yeah, you're going to have to climb out of the plane and put your foot on the strut down by the wheel and you hang on to the strut, and then when you're ready to go, I'll give you the signal, you look up at the smiley face and you let go when you get going. And this is the course we're talking about, and we're doing the practicing, and there's this girl in the front. She must have been, I don't know, 100 pounds soaking wet, just tiny little thing, and she kept asking these questions. You know, she wanted to be there, but she was really quite scared about this. And she's going, what's it going to feel like to get out there? Well, the guy goes, it's a 250-mile-an-hour wind. You're going to open that door and you'll be gone. Her eyes are big. And he's going, oh, no, no. And I'm going, that's probably not the way to encourage people here. But funny thing how it ends up. There's three of us in every plane that goes up. And this girl ends up in the plane with us. So I'm out first and Carla's behind me. And then this other girl's in the back. And in the plane, they have a video camera so you can catch the whole experience while you're going up. And they have a video camera on the wings so they can see what you're doing and so you can progress and continue on. And you look at I have a videotape. I can't find it. And it's VHS, so I don't know if we have that here anymore either. But you got to see what's going on in the plane. And this is coming down to the obedience. I look at this as somewhat of the obedience. The girl in the back who is, a little bit fearful over this whole thing, she's sitting in the back and she's freaked out before we even get off the ground. And as we're going on and on and on, you can just see like white, eyes big, sweat. And it's not that high definition, but you can still see it. And she, it's just okay, this is becoming very real in her life. I look at Carla, who's jumped before, so has a bit of this experience behind her. But you look at Carla, and if you know anything about Carla, small planes, car rides, anything like that does not sit well with her whatsoever. She's sick. She is up in this plane thinking, 3,000 feet, can we get there? Come on, let's got to hurry. I want out of this plane because I'm going to puke. So there's the impatience of, come on, let's get this going. And now I'm at the front, and I may look calm, but I think I'm just paralyzed. I can't quite remember. But it's that feeling of what's this going to be like? And this is that same thing when God's calling you to do something. What's this going to feel like? What is the experience? You got to push yourself out there. You got to put yourself there to go on. I remember getting out the first time, putting my foot out. Yeah, it's windy. You're grabbing onto that strut, and you're flying. You're going, this is really crazy. And you let go. And I remember as I let go, and this is the experience. You let go, and you're just going, okay, please, just tug. I want tug. Hello, tug. And you're sitting there, and all of a sudden, and you're going, oh, it's up, it's square, it's good. Now I can live, right? The reality of that is that's 3 seconds, but it felt like forever. And you could see, like, the video camera has me, and my teeth are clenched around, straight out, and I'm not seeing nothing. And but it comes out, it's good, I survived, grab it, and now I'm out there enjoying the ride. And it is, it's an amazing experience to come down there. I look at that as, yes, I jumped out of the plane, and it was an amazing experience. I felt the glory of what it's supposed to be. I looked at the girl, she never ever did get out of the plane, she came back down. I think they did 3 circles. She never got out. She came back down. And you think, okay, that's a failure. And I'm going, it's somewhat of a failure, but it's not a big failure. In reality, she still went through it, scared, went on, tried to get out there. Who knows if she did after that? I don't know. But she at least went that far. And it's not a complete failure, but it's at least making the steps there. And that's the way, as we do this, we may fail or feel we failed, but there is some win in it. The cool thing about that experience is the next time God calls you to do something or calls you to do that same thing, I've been up there. I know what this feels like. I know I survived. I know God is with me. I did jump again. Carla didn't. I don't know who the other people were, but I did go out there again. And the second time you're up there, you're progressing. You want to get to that 10,000 feet where you can free fall, pull your own chute, get a little bit of the Superman feeling going on there. And that's where I wanted to go. Money didn't allow me or time. That's the other thing, because we were free. We got to the end of the day. If there was time, we could go. So I did one more jump. But this time they're going up there, and I know what it's like to get out of that plane. I know what it's like to hang on to the strut. I know what it's like that chute will open. I didn't pack the chute. I have trust in it, okay? Next time they're out, when you jump out, they say, okay, I'm going to give you a hand signal when you're going. Give it back to me so I know that you're conscious, okay? So that's the same thing. Let go. He gives me the thumbs up, I give it back, and carry on. And that's the progression of what it is. But the reality of that is, I've stepped out of that plane. I've gone where God's told me. I survived. I can do it again. The other side of that story, I guess, It's not always looking the same. Sometimes you'll jump out of that plane, and maybe you'll look up, and that rectangle chute is all tied up, and then you're in trouble, right? But there is a safety chute. They told us to say some words that I'm not going to repeat here. To go through, pull your other safety chute, and start praying is what they say. But you do. They don't all look the same, but they are still all in God's hands, and that's the reality of it. As we look at the obedience here, I think the important thing here is that you learn some of Jehoshaphat's background to his story. I'm thinking that's pretty amazing obedience that Jehoshaphat came into. But then you hear the story of King Asa, his father was the king. And his story was he was up against Ethiopians, an army of 1 million, same position. I don't know how I'm going to win this. I don't know what to do. God came out and showed himself and won that battle too. So there's stories from someone else, stories in his life that he knows that God has shown up and God will show up. And I think that's an important thing that we as Christians need to remember, is that we need to share these things. We need to tell those stories of what's going on. You put yourself out there, and it was an amazing thing when we were in Kenya. The last day that we were setting posts, we took pictures of the last post being set in cement. And this is a long ways back. Like we were 900 or 300 paces from the front of the property where the cement was built to where we were setting the post. So there was a lot of time waiting. And I was working with John Wanjala, who is one of the founders of it, who is now living in Grand Prairie. But we were just spent the whole day talking, and I was just talking a story about this experience of setting up the orphanage and how it started. And he was just talking about him and his three friends that were doing this. There wasn't a lot of support, but they just felt God was calling into that. So they kept going, and they said, you know, we'll just keep going one more month, and hopefully, you know, something will work. And so they kept going one more month, and then it's all, okay, that worked, keep going. And it's just these stories of how God showed up time after time after time, and they just kept on going and putting themselves out of their power, just waiting to see how God would show up. And it was just, you're sitting there just going, this is amazing, just to hear these stories, right, that God shows up in such amazing ways. And there was a bit of a break there, and me being uncomfortable with silence, I just trying to make conversation. I said, John, can you imagine what it would have been like had you bailed on this whole experience, all those blessings, all that, those stories of where you've seen God show up, that you would have missed them, the changes in lives and the people that you met. And he just sat there quiet, and he just started looking around, and you could just see it going through his mind. And all of a sudden, he just started crying. He said, I never thought of that. He said, you know, all that I've seen, I would have missed had I not continued on believing in what God had put in my heart and my call, had I kept going, had I bailed, had I got out of the plane too early, had I not jumped out of the plane, whatever you want to call it, all that stuff that I would have missed. It was interesting when Dave asked me to speak up here. That was part of the other thing here, is Dave asking me to speak. And when he asked me, I said, Dave, you don't ask. Because then I can't. If you don't ask, I'm not disobedient. If you ask, then I'm disobedient, okay? And he asked me, when do you want to speak? And he said, we got these dates in June, and we got these dates in July. And my mind was, July, it's later. But as we're leading up to this, the other dates is when Davies were up here talking about them and their experience of what they went through, what the walk was to their obedience to the call that God had given in their life. And I'm going, well, that's what I'm talking about. But that's not reality. That's not the same. That's their story. And that was an amazing experience to see the process that they went through to God's obedience and what they pictured it and where they went. I think it was Mitch's thing that hit me the most, saying that he's not a missionary. He's not the person. He's not the missionary. And that's the same thing. Way back when, I can't remember the gentleman's name that was in here speaking, and there was a call. This is before I was married. Carla was in Georgia. And there was a call saying, are you called to missions? And that's what I felt God was calling me to missions. And I went forward that day, and it's one of those things, that's 20 years ago, 22 years ago. And I'm thinking, as I think of missions, I think of my in-laws. I think of Kurt and Kim. I think of missions, and that's not my thing in my mind. But as the Davies were up there, and what I've come to experience in these last last little while, is that God's calling me to my mission. My mission is where I'm at. I've got to make a difference in my world, and that's the broader reach part of this. I work in a shop where there's people that will never go to church and probably never hear of God. So if I can have some experience, or I've got to be who God's called me to be where I'm at today. And is that easy? Have you met truckers? I could put a name out there, and it's an Earl. You would know who I'm talking about, Clayton. You know, he's the kind of guy that I ended up speaking to him over the whole Kenya thing. He donated to the Kenya trip. If you knew Clayton, you'd be going, really? He could relate, he could do. God was telling me to do it. And did I want to? Not a bit. Keeping a separation there, always felt comfortable, always felt complacent, right? But I put it out there. And it was an amazing experience. I've talked about it. And then when I got back, I ran into him at Tim Hortons. And we ended up sitting down for an hour and a half. And he wanted to hear all about the experience. And he's just, oh, that sounds like such a... And I was going, what an amazing God we have. Because I never would have experienced that had I not put myself out there, right? I look at my job. I am where I'm at because I felt God was pushing me there. I was very comfortable where I was before. I owned my own truck. Business was going. The opportunity knocked, and it was that thing that's saying, yes, I want you in here, and I'm going, no, I don't want to go there. I'm happy doing what I'm doing. But we made that move. It was, like I said last year when I was talking about it, I got a picture of when I made up my mind that, yes, I will follow you, as I was underneath my truck, water dripping down my neck as I'm trying to pull a brake off or spring out while people are piling up. It was just a bad experience. And I made my decision that, yes, I will go. It's not always easy. I'm looking at it that God's called us to a road, and they don't all look the same. You drive from here to McBride, and this is a trucker analogy, but this is mine. Here to McBride, my first trip out here, I drove all the way from Drake, Saskatchewan, to Prince George. And if you've ever done that, it's a long ways. When you're going through the prairies, there's a town every 10 kilometers, right? There's places to tell you you're getting somewhere. I got to Jasper, and I thought, oh, I'm just about there. I never thought I was going to get to McBride. And then when I got from McBride to Prince George, I thought somebody made a loop road out there. But it was. I was never going to make it. But I did. And it's amazing. Now that I've had the experience of driven that road so many times, I know where I'm at that road. I've been down that road that God's called me on. The trip doesn't always look the same. There's those days you're in a blinding snowstorm, you're doing 10 kilometers an hour. There's those days your truck breaks down. There's those days that you're chained up. There's the beautiful days, the sunshine, the bears on the side of the road, the moose not in front of you. You get to see God's glory without hitting them. The road is always different, but God's still calling us down that road that we are going on. And if we don't, we will still get there. The job will still get done. The victory of God's plan will still work out. We will miss the abundant life that he's given us, that he's promised us, if we're obedient to him. Last night, I thought, because I spoke last night here, and I wasn't quite sweating this much, but a lot more comfortable last night. Last night, I thought, okay, I did, I survived, it's going to be easy, maybe I'll sleep tonight. Because as I was going through this, Dave asked me, I thought, I've got it prepared. I did this in Kenya. It's not a big deal. So, you know, my notes sat there. I didn't put the work into it that I was expecting. My good friend showed up, and I think a lot of you guys have met him. His name's Procrastination. Yeah. I sat there, and Monday, actually it wasn't Monday because Monday was a long weekend, and there was football to watch, but my other. Yeah. And I sat down on Tuesday, and I started going through my notes, and I'm going, really? You're telling me I can't use this? Like, really? It's all right here. And that's where God's told me that it isn't that. There is something else that he wants, and that's where the deeper roots and broader reach came in, because that's who we are, where we live, and what he's calling us to do. There are people being moved right now to things. I look at Jerry, when I remember he was talking about the whole CMA thing and what God was moving him into that. Were you comfortable? Exactly. But you've survived, and you've seen the blessings. You've seen the glory. So last night I was sitting in bed and I thought, oh good, I'm going to sleep tonight. All's going to be well. It's all ready. I can just go. It wasn't so. Me and Melatonin got a hold of each other at 2 o'clock in the morning. But it's interesting that God, I figure I'm going to read. There's obviously something going on here. So I opened up my Bible, and it's interesting. Like, this is Nick Sokobe from the New Hope Church in Kenya, and the bulletin from that day, and I just kind of opened it up, and this is where it fell open. And this is Jeremiah 7, verse 21, came to my attention last night, and I was looking for a verse like this, never found it, did last night. This is what the Lord of Heaven's armies, I love that statement. This is the New Living Testament, New Living Translation, and that statement, the Lord of Heaven's armies, because it's not the Lord, it's the Lord of Heaven's armies. He's got power beyond belief to take us where he wants to take us. This is what the Lord of Heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says, take your burnt offerings and your sacrifices and eat them yourselves. When I led your ancestors out of Egypt, it was not burnt offerings and sacrifices I wanted from them. This is what I told them. Obey me, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. Do everything as I say, and all will be well. That obey is better than sacrifice. It may not make sense what he's calling us to do, but the adventure that's on the other end of it is beyond, will blow your mind in a lot of ways. And this is going back to my 80s music that everybody used to bug me about, my cassette tape book full of eight tracks was before that. Steve Camp, and there's one of his songs that was always, there's a section in the middle of it that always made me think, and it was, God is calling us out of our comfort zone to live a life complete surrender to the cross. To live recklessly is not to live dangerously, but righteously, because it's God's radical grace for us that we can live a life of radical obedience to him. And that's one of those statements that's always been there, becoming real. It's amazing what happens over a lifetime. They don't call us wise young men, they call us wise old men. I'm not calling myself old yet, but I'm learning as I go along. And that's, I hope there's something you got besides a nervous truck driver up here. Thank you.